Welcome to The Solar Coaster, a podcast about the ups and downs of the Australian solar industry, brought to you by the technical team at Supply Partners, with host Wade Allen and technical guru Andrew Thompson.
Okay, well, welcome back to The Solar Coaster podcast, brought to you by Supply Partners, Australia's leading technical distributor of solar and energy storage equipment. We are not just box movers, but we make your life a heck of a lot easier bringing you not only technical, but sales support that you need in your business so you can hopefully stay in the cart on this crazy ride we call the Australian solar industry. My name is Wade Allen, and with me always is my right-hand man, Andrew Thompson, our local... what are you, Andrew? You're there.
IT, solar guru, solar wizard.
Indeed, our technical guru. How you doing today?
Doing well. I'm pretty excited for this podcast.
Indeed. This is going to be a great podcast. And without a doubt, the most sort of topical thing in our industry right now, and it's exciting and it's always evolving, and that is energy storage. Everybody wants to know about it. And if you heard our last podcast, we touched on residential. Today, we're going to focus on commercial. And to do so, we have brought in a guest who is at the forefront of a game-changing software platform that is helping all of you out there that are at the front lines, banging on doors, getting in front of decision makers. And they have developed a tool to make your presentations, your solutions, your life way more legitimate and way easier. From Orchestra, we have the co-founder, the co-CEO, the co-cheese, Mr. James Alston. Thank you, sir, for coming.
Thank you very much, Wade. Yeah, good to be here.
Well, yeah, and thank you for coming all the way up here. You reside in Hobart.
I do. We have a 100% remote team, of which the team is spread out across the eastern seaboard. But yeah, I live with my family down in Hobart.
How post-COVID of you guys?
Yeah.
Very much.
It makes it easy, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was easy during COVID as well, I have to say.
But no, we really appreciate you making the trip up here because it makes it so much better for to have you here as we like to also record this with video,
yep.
Not just audio. And so how do you like the studio?
It's very nice. Yeah,
it's pretty cool, eh?
I need one in my office.
Yeah, well, that's our awesome technical team behind the scenes over there. Luke and James, shout out. Thanks, boys. So let's start with a little bit of the history of Orchestra, James. How did it all start and why?
Yeah, it's a really interesting story, actually. We started off, I started off as running a management consultancy in New Energy. We called it New Energy Ventures, and we worked with a lot of energy companies and property developers and large energy consumers to basically help them understand the new energy space. So that was a combination of technical, commercial and regulatory advice that we were handing out. And in the course of doing that work, we started developing a lot of models to model new energy projects. So we modeled, you know, embedded networks and virtual power plants and what we called second generation PPAs, which like integrated with retail contracts. And we, you know, these were all built in Excel, but we started to touch the sides of Excel's capability, particularly around tariff modeling. Yeah. So
that's impressive.
So we got to the point where we like some of these models would take a minute just to process. And we're like, well, this is just unworkable as a business. So we started moving bits of that, of what we'd built in Excel, and putting it into Python code, and then having Excel as a front end UI and Python in the back end. When COVID hit in 2020, all of our forward revenues dried up. As a little management consultancy, no one really wanted to spend any money on strategy projects at that point. And fortunately, we're in a lucky position that we had some money in the bank, and you know, government was throwing money at small businesses to keep us alive. And we put all of that money from the Liberal government, thank you very much, into a project looking at the best places in Australia for commercial industrial batteries and virtual power plants. We wrote a white paper, still on the New Energy Ventures website. And it basically, I think, fired the Stardust gun for, you know, commercial energy storage in Australia. We had lots of large companies set up businesses based on our research and our work there. And to do that research, we wrote a whole package of Python code to do battery modeling. So we, you know, put this white paper out in the world, and then suddenly everyone wanted to talk to us about battery modeling. And it was at that point we decided that we might need to start thinking about turning this into a piece of software. So I found a, you know, graduate engineer, taught him how to, you know, model in, oh, sorry, taught him how to do front-end development, And we created the initial version one of the software by about a year later after releasing the white paper. You know, we raised some money about 10 months after that, and we're about to raise our seed round, you know, again in the next coming months. So, yeah, it's been a pretty amazing ride, but it's been very much a business that has started in a very grounded place, you know, in deep technical commercial modeling at a consulting level, and then taking that knowledge and embedding it into software and making that software available to a much broader audience and to people beyond a technical nature as well. So we're really trying to support people in a selling capacity with this software.
Yeah, it's a great piece of software.
Thank you. We like to think so.
Yeah, from what I've played around, it's amazing. So why storage? Did you just see that was where everything was headed?
I was just so clear that was where everything was headed. Yeah. I mean, it was at a time where, you know, everyone was talking about, you know, Hornsdale Power Station, and, you know, it was a huge amount of interest that was generated right across the board, you know, for storage in Australia. And you know, everyone wanted to talk about contingency FCAS and wholesale market arbitrage, which are the things we'll talk about later in this podcast. But we realized that, like, there must be a really big opportunity in commercial storage that no one had really looked at, right? So a lot of people were installing residential batteries, you know, to improve solar self-consumption and maybe provide some backup power. And there's these utility scale batteries that are going on, but no one's talking about commercial energy storage. And when we started doing the analysis, we were like, holy crap, this is such a big opportunity. Mm-hmm. And we've had subsequent conversations with people in the space where they're like, oh yeah, we did some modeling and the numbers were getting so good that we had to like tone down the economics because we thought that it was just going to have too much commercial energy storage. I'm like, well, that's dumb. Like, this is clearly a huge opportunity, and the barriers that are there are barriers that can be solved with software. So one of the big barriers is just being able to articulate the commercial value of these opportunities to decision makers in a way that's really easy to do, and that doesn't require, you know, years of knowledge of you know, tariff modeling, of energy modeling, of designing, you know, battery models that you can, and, you know, trying to do this in Excel, which frankly we think is impossible, and being able to like do that in literally minutes, and that is like, in removing that barrier, we have unlocked this whole opportunity for the industry.
Yeah. Right. The amount of scenarios you can create in a matter of minutes is unbelievable. But we'll get into that.
Can I just add?
Yeah, go for
it. I guess over the years, I've attempted, I guess, doing proposals using other software. I think Homer Pro has been used by engineers globally.
Yep.
I consider myself quite IT savvy. I've also been in the industry for quite a while, been involved with PPA projects, have a good understanding of all the aspects, but I really struggled using Homer Pro.
Yep.
Just a very complicated piece of software that also looks quite, I don't know, antiquated. So when we first come across Orchestra, I believe it was at Smart Energy Conference in Brisbane.
It was last year.
You were doing a presentation. We had no idea who you were, but we thought, hey, we'll give it a go. And I tell you what, we were blown away. And when the presentation finished, we just insisted on meeting you. And here we are today. So we were definitely impressed.
Yeah, I mean, when we went and spoke to our customers and we were trying to make the decision, do we turn this into software? You know, we were chatting with people and like, okay, what tools are you using today? And Homer was a regular one that came up, right? It's one of the few pieces of software that's out there that you can actually model that's affordable, right? Mm-hmm. There's other options which are crazy expensive, but like, it's an affordable solution. But the common feedback was, you need one analyst to do the work and then another analyst to check the first analyst's work to make sure they've actually set it up right before you do the model run. We're like, well, that's dumb. So you need $400,000 worth of, you know, analytical resource plus a $6,000 piece of software to actually get the results. And so we're like, we need to build a piece of software that's really easy to use, right? So that someone we sort of say, if you understand how to read an electricity bill, a commercial energy bill, and are able to translate that into a piece of software, which is a fairly straightforward process, and you understand the difference between a kilowatt and a kilowatt hour when it comes to sizing a battery, you should be able to use our software, right? That is like the threshold that we think you should be able to have, which that is a very large number of people, right?
Should hopefully be the whole solar industry.
It should hopefully be the solar industry. Right, so that's
what...
Oh, it's
not.
We're working on that.
We're working on reading tariffs. But like that, we wanted to make it easy to use. We wanted to make it really fast. So you talked about being able to model, you know, hundreds of simulations. So you can model 250 different solutions. So different sizes of solar, different sizes of battery, changing tariffs, other sort of changing aspects around the site, and you can do 200 in one hit. We've parallelized that so that all the software is built in AWS. So rather than Homer, where it's a native app, our software is hosted on AWS. When you hit the run button, we take those 250 different solutions that you need modeled, and we give each one its own cloud computer and run them all in parallel.
At the same time.
And so if you ran the analysis on a state-of-the-art MacBook Pro like I have, it's about 4 hours to do that analysis. We can knock it out in under 60 seconds. So it's just absolutely game-changing being able to take all this, you know, incredible horsepower and be able to put that into the hands of, you know, the average solar installer.
Man, you could do this right in front of the customer.
I mean, that's the thing.
If you really wanted to.
You can. So if the customer has their bill available right there and you have... the interval data, and even if you don't have the interval data, you can use data within our library. You can literally, within an hour, set up the site, run several hundred scenarios, and be able to have a really valuable conversation with a customer around, you know, what is this solution going to do commercially for you as a business? So a common thing that you might hear as a solar installer is a customer might say something flippant like, I want zero bill. Well, what does that mean exactly from a commercial perspective? Does that mean that they want to go off grid? Because that's technically what zero bill would be, like no bill, right? And then, or does it mean that you want to have enough revenue off the system in January that it would cover the system? Or do you want enough revenue over the whole year to cover the energy bill and you don't really care about the return? Or do you just want a 15% IRR? And with this software, within an hour, frankly less, you can be able to model all those different scenarios and have a conversation with a customer about this is what zero bill might mean. Sure. And what do you actually mean? If we drill down to the next level and we try and put this into really tangible, meaningful financial returns, what do you mean by that? And which solution are you actually looking for here?
Yeah.
And so this software basically, you know, takes what would be otherwise probably days of financial analysis and technical analysis and turns it into something you can do under an hour.
Yeah, right. So just to bring it back a little bit before we go too far down the rabbit hole of all the tools that are available, for all those listening, like I'm sure they want to be able to do something like this. And there's a story in their head and they're telling themselves, I can't do this or it's too hard or whatever. What do you see from maybe not even the salesperson, but from a business that's looking at getting into this space, what's the hardest thing for them that they're currently not getting by not having Orchestra? Like if they were to have Orchestra as a tool, how would that help their business right now?
Like most businesses want to be able to grow, right? That's a pretty typical motivation for many business owners. But where do you start in that growth, right? You need to be able to start from a position of being able to have a pipeline of projects that you can then go and build up your blue-collar workforce and be able to deliver. And, you know, Orchestra makes that process so much easier to do, right? So you might have 20 or 30 different commercial customers that you've installed a commercial system, and you can go through all those old customers and within Orchestra, you know, within just a few days, probably even just a day, go through and actually identify like what are the optimal solutions that for these particular sites, and where might be the lowest hanging fruit that we could actually go out and target. We talk about in our business trying to empower what we call feasibility first selling, right? So where you start off with the feasibility analysis and you go and try and identify solutions right up front, or you know, do this kind of like pre-qualification even before you're talking to a customer if you've got the data. But then in the sales process, start off by trying to model in a way that is relatively light technically compared to other ways of doing it, right? You're not jumping into Helioscope and doing panel placements on a roof. You're using our software and you're using the PV Watts integration to kind of get the first pass analysis. And in doing that, that work and bring the feasibility forward, you're able to take your most technical resources and you're able to push them further back in the sales cycle. So right now, you probably, most solar businesses will have that key resource within a business that is the guru, the technical guru. And for us, it's about making that resource have giving that resource superpowers. What we mean by that is that resource might be drawn into tenders and, you know, a quarter of their work actually gets utilized at the end of the day, where you've gone and done all this hard work designing a solution, you know, doing the feasibility analysis only to present that solution to a customer and the customer goes with the competitor. Like, that is like worst possible outcome. It's the most expensive resource and they're like probably one of the lowest productivities in the business. We want to like flip that process, right? We want to be able to empower less technical people in your business, maybe the salespeople in your organization, to be able to have those initial conversations, to be able to take those projects that they've, you know, that they've got that are kind of sort of semi-qualified to a fully qualified project. And you might even get to the point where you could sign a letter of exclusivity or even sign a contract subject to technical due diligence where the commercials are nailed down.
Yeah.
And then you send your technical guys to site. Then you go and make sure there's enough capacity in the main switchboard. Then you go and do the fine, you know, panel placement on the roof for these projects. And then those technical resources get a multiplication benefit out of their productivity of where they are today. And it's that that'll allow solar businesses to be able to scale really effectively. Whereas right now, to scale means that you have to find another one of these technical people into the business and they become the choke point to the organization. Mm-hmm. Now, there's going to be other choke points. Like, we're removing one of the critical ones and you're going to find other choke points, obviously, around that mix. So you need salespeople that have enough technical knowledge to be able to get into the software. You can't just put, you know, anyone in there. And you need to have the blue-collar workforce afterwards to be able to deliver these projects. But we're dealing with one of the most complicated ones, the hardest to train, right? You can't go and take any old person and put them in that highly technical role. You need someone with years of experience. And we want to be able to take that person and make them so much more powerful than they were before.
That is incredible.
Just touching on a point that you mentioned before regarding all of the feasibility analysis, and when you're talking about a zero bill, what does that mean? A good example that's come up recently is leading into the end of financial year. I'm getting a lot of inquiries from customers who are saying that, hey, my customer, they have a grant, they have to spend it by end of financial year. We want to give them the biggest, the best system that they can get. So with Orchestra, I suppose in that case, IRR is probably meaningless. It's just, here's the capital outlay. What is the best system that we can achieve with this? And Orchestra would be a tool to...
Yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, in some ways it would be. But, you know, do you just want to go and sell them the biggest system, or do you want to go and sell them the biggest system and show the most value that you could possibly get off that system? One of the things that the industry kind of gets stuck on, and this is kind of a legacy of the residential industry, right, is that in the residential space, it's the biggest system you can get on for the cheapest price. Right, yep. And no one really cares about the financials. In fact, I could probably guarantee you that most residential systems that have been put in today won't get the payback that anyone's promising them, right? Because they're oversized, and the customer's load doesn't coincide with the generation, and you know you just never. Most of the energy's been getting sent straight to grid. Right. And you can see that in the electricity price in the grid, right? Like, I think that's the other thing. This is real. And if you take that method, that approach, and you apply that to the commercial space, you're going to fail, right? You need to think as a solar installer about the revenue that your system is going to generate by installing it, and being able to present that revenue in a really, really accurate way, and start talking about returns. So when we look at a battery and we say, are we just going to go and, you know, use this battery for solar self-consumption? I can guarantee you, in a commercial and industrial space, that battery will fail economically, right? You need to now look at a broader range of different revenue options. And when you start to open your mind around the different revenue options that are out there, then you will make these opportunities stack up. And it's that approach that I think is really critical. So, yeah, you can get that grant money, but what if you can get that grant money plus you can show the customer how with this installation you're going to get this return? That's going to be far more powerful than the next guy who's just said, oh, yeah, we can get a cheaper system.
Yeah, that's almost perfectly leading us into what I wanted to talk about, and that is the value stack.
Yep.
And, you know, your presentation that you gave at the Brisbane Smart Energy Conference talked about that exactly, that if you're just going to put in a battery, it's not going to add up. But if you're talking about other things that, and you guys have the tools built right into this, and that's in the site adjustments and in other things. So why don't we just crack open that door a little bit, and we can talk technical, but also let's talk layman as well when we talk about these certain things. So there was basically two different stacks. There was a simple stack and a more, you know, complex stack.
Yep.
Let's talk about that simple stack right now.
Yeah. We talk about them as simple and advanced, right? And in our world, simple is exclusively behind the meter value, right? And what we mean by that is value that is obtained from direct tariff benefits or some other benefit that is created in that site, and you're not looking front of meter. And by front of meter, we're talking about participating in energy markets.
Right.
So, you know, basically, you know, the same kind of revenue that you might get at the you know, the Tesla bid battery, you can tap into those with a commercial battery or even a residential battery in certain situations. So those are the sort of the distinction, that the simple, which is behind the meter only, and advanced, which is front of meter, includes the front of meter stuff. So let's talk about the simple stuff. So the common approach and what a novice to the commercial battery space will think is, I'm going to take the same approach that I've done for my residential batteries and I'm going to apply this for commercial. And as I said before, that'll fail. Right. And the reason for that is that when you're doing these batteries, you need to be looking at a difference between the charging and discharging, you know, value, or the sort of the arbitrage benefit from the rate that you charge at versus the rate that you sell or you export out of the battery at, of around 30 cents. That's sort of like a really good sort of rule of thumb. So you think about what that 30 cents might be. That might be the difference between the export rate that you are exporting into the grid and the peak import rate. Mm-hmm. Now, 30 cents is achievable in the residential space. You know, there's tariffs in Ausgrid, which are good examples of where you might find that. But in the commercial space, that's pretty rare.
Yeah.
Right? And there will be cases that it works, but it's rare. So when you take that out of the mix, you go, well, what are you left with? Well, actually, there's a lot. So one of the big benefits and one of the sort of foundational elements to a commercial battery value stack will be demand charge reduction.
Mm. Yeah.
So a common approach in the commercial space will be that you'll have a nice commercial load profile. So, you know, if you look at a load profile, you'll have a base load, and then at around 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, all the HVAC turns on, all the lights turn on, and then, you know, the load that then goes back down around sort of 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening. When you put solar on that, it eats out that load profile, and but you end up with this little peak at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you add a battery to that, it can slice off that peak. It's actually the amount of work that it has to do to reduce demand at the end of the day diminishes quite significantly, because the solar has done most of the work of actually like removing the kind of energy use in the middle of the day, and you get this little tiny peak. And so batteries come along and they can like clean up that peak really nicely.
Yeah, and also cover a cloud.
If
your peak's in the middle of the day and you're trying to get that down and it just happens to be an awful day, that's where the battery can step in as well and almost guarantee you that you can keep that peak demand under a certain threshold.
Exactly. So that might be, that's, we see demand charge reduction as foundational to the value stack in any case, right? But it'll kind of be network specific as to when that works. So there's all the networks in Queensland, great. You know, where we are today, you know, you're in a perfect state for doing battery projects. New South Wales might be, there'll be some that'll work, some that won't. In Victoria, most cases won't work except for Powercore. And it'll, in the other states, it's kind of like a little bit sort of like specific to the tariff that are on. So you kind of need to software like Orchestra, because you need to be able to like quickly model these projects, work out whether they're valuable or not, and then, you know, proceed on, right? So that's that qualification process, you know, you need to integrate into your sales process to actually work out whether you've got something interesting there.
So go ahead.
Sorry, and it's probably not just the network provider as well, but in my experience, there's particular types of customers where perhaps the peak duration was quite long across the day that a battery just didn't stack up because the peaks were too long, and you simply couldn't put enough solar into those batteries to get them charged and cover that. It didn't make it feasible. But in the past, we could spend 2 weeks and have multiple people involved just to get to the end outcome that battery is not going to solve their issues.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that's the classic situation, right? Mm. You spend, you know, 2 weeks building an Excel model just to get to the end of like,
not gonna work.
So close and it's not gonna work. Yeah.
Whereas just delete a cell, you're fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whereas like literally it's a drop down, change this, run, and like 5 minutes later you've got the answer, right, as to whether it's gonna. But you raise a really interesting point. And I would really encourage you listeners not to try and pre-guess the outcome.
Sure.
Right. So when we were writing that white paper I referred to in the beginning, we kind of had these kind of like preconceived thoughts around, oh, yes, you know, this is the type of return that we might expect out of this particular project. And we got to a point where we're like, we have got to stop trying to guess what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because you just can't get all the information into your head. You've got to look at a confluence of the tariff, the load profile shape, and the nature of that tariff and what kind of tariff it is, and the solar and the batteries. Like, it's all those different parts that all work together as like an ecosystem that actually bring together the how it's actually going to work. So there's kind of like some basic rules of thumb that, like, you know, of course more expensive demand tariffs lead to better battery outcomes, but in the case you just outlined, you can have a perfectly flat load profile.
Yeah,
you can have a data center, right? Like a load profile which is about as flat as it gets. But if that data center is sitting on a time of use tariff where there's a time of use window between 5 in the afternoon and 8 in the evening, and you stick a battery on that, it'll perfectly slice off that, mm-hmm. off that peak, and you'll basically like a little step down, and the battery will get a lovely return, right? Because it's a really consistent. You can basically bank all the demand saving that you're going to get from that particular period, because there's no like, you know, potential change or volatility that you have to account for in that. So I would really encourage listeners to be like, don't try and overly pre-qualify your opportunities. There are some rules that you can apply, but like, you do need to use a piece of software like Orchestra to really, you know, identify whether the opportunity is going to be viable or not.
And I just want to do a quick little aside here. Load profiles, obviously you guys have some generic ones built in, but what is the easiest way to upload someone's load profile and where do you get that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you ultimately have to go back to the customer's retailer to ask them for the load data. But what we've tried to do with Orchestra, and you talked about the library there, is, you know, what incentive does the customer have if you just go to them and say, well, I can't do any modeling until you give me the load data? Customer's got absolutely no idea whether this is going to be a wild goose chase or it's actually going to lead to something valuable. So the intention of the library is that you can find a similar load profile. So we've got 100 different commercial load profiles in there. You can find a similar one to the site. You can rescale that load profile either by the total load of the year or the mm-hmm. maximum demand, mm-hmm. and then apply the actual tariff from the site, which, you know, should be easy to transcribe off a bill, and then go and do some basic modeling and go, well, look, this project's probably going to make, you know, actually deliver a really good outcome. Would you now like to go and do the work to actually, you know, go and get this load data? And now the customer goes, oh, wow, this is actually maybe a really good opportunity, and they're incentivized to actually go and do that work, because it's not always easy. Mm. There are changes that are coming where we might be able to make that easier in the future, where there's like potential integrations in with, you know, open access for the load data. But today you've still got to – there's no other way around it. You've still got to get that information from a retailer or the distributor to be able to then load that data into Orchestra. We've changed it so that we've made the upload process as easy as possible, so you can upload a range of different formats and it kind of like massages and makes it easy for to deal with that data. But, yeah, unfortunately there's no way around that process.
And that's the NEM12 file, right, the CSV file?
Yeah, so there's a few different formats, but NEM12 is the common format that you'll get out of most distributors.
And is it hard to get that from a distributor?
No, there's a standard process for all retailers. So if you're, you know, with Shell Energy or Origin or whoever it is, they'll have a form that it's probably on their website in most cases. You literally just fill in the name of that customer. There'll be, you know, need to list the NIMIs, the yep. National Meter Identifiers, for the different meters, and request the period that you want that data from, submit it to the retailer, and that data typically should come back within, you know, 2 to 3 business days. And if it's not, there's a problem and you should probably talk to the ombudsman. But, you know, that data should be readily available, and it shouldn't be any more complicated than doing that process.
I'm not sure if it's the case anymore, but in the past, at least with Ergon in North Queensland, they actually charged a fee for that. But we found that once we got the customer to a point in time where they were happy to engage you to do some more detailed feasibility analysis and perhaps pay a fee, that's your foot in the door. Perhaps they might not engage somebody else. So once you're at that stage, it really puts you at a higher level above everybody else.
Yeah. There's this great German saying which translates to English as what's for free isn't worth anything. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so if you get people to pay, they're more likely to take this whatever you do seriously.
Skin in the game, baby.
Skin in the game.
When you upload the load profile and you do all this analysis, so the site adjustments, you can change tariffs on the fly, right? So that's taking someone from one tariff and putting them, qualifying them and putting them onto another one, whether that's through the demand reduction or whatever the case may be. Talk us through that just a little bit.
Yeah. So one of the common things that you'll find in the commercial industrial space is that the tariff may change once you're going to install some technology, even with solar, right? So it's not uncommon within a commercial electricity retail contract, that if the load profile materially changes, which would happen, obviously, when you install solar, that you need to go back to the retailer and renegotiate that contract with them. So right up front, we were like, oh, we've got to just make sure that this is really, really easy for someone to do within our software. So within our scenarios and our site adjustments, you can put in a new retail contract, or you can look at a network tariff change. So another common one is that you might move a customer from being a large business customer on a demand tariff to a small business customer under the threshold. So there's some, depending on which state you're in, it would either be 100 megawatt hours or 160 megawatt hours per annum. And you may move a customer from that over that threshold to under that threshold. And when you do, you may be able to completely remove the demand charges for that customer. Sure, their per kilowatt hour rates will go up, but that networked tariff benefit of changing from that demand tariff to being a non-demand tariff may be huge.
Oh, yeah. Especially when their loads outside of solar and battery are almost diminished.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Another situation might be you have a solar system that you've installed on a site, and your intent was to kind of like get them over this threshold, but you didn't quite get there. You're still at 110 megawatt hours, and you've got this system which is, exporting heaps of energy, but you can't count that. There's no sort of net benefit that's being counted here. It's all the import. And so with a battery, relatively small battery you might be able to take some of the export, use it later in the day, and then reduce the import overall for that site. And that might be the means of which you're actually able to make this battery work. Mm-hmm. So back to the concept of value stacks, this is a classic case of where you might be able to start value stacking, right? You might be able to have that sort of time of use benefit but you also are going to take that customer from a large customer tariff to a small customer tariff, and that the total value of those two things together might be the thing that actually makes the difference.
Yeah. What else is in the basic stack?
Backup powers is a really big one, right? So I think as an energy industry, we tend to get locked into here's the energy savings. Yeah. Whereas there's actually when you start to think about other stuff that's outside of the energy bin, you can, potentially have some huge benefits. So you might have a customer which is, on a skinny part of the grid in the Ergon network, and they need to, they want to improve their reliability, because every time their site goes out, they might have, even if the site switches off for, 5 or 10 seconds, they may need to run around and check all the machines for an hour before they can switch everything back on. And that has a obvious productivity cost. That may be thousands of dollars that business needs to spend, to not just on the labor to go and do that, but also the lost productivity of the site. And then you might have a site where it might be out for hours and the lost productivity of that site. For a battery, you can claim all of that benefit, right?
Yeah.
And you can put that against the upfront capital cost. And you might have a battery which is, marginally going to pay or not going to pay, and you add that backup power benefit on top of the energy benefits, and suddenly you're at a 2-year payback.
What's the best way to find that out? Is it just to ask the business owners,
exactly,
like how often do you use power?
And we've just released this functionality in Orchestra, and we've tried to set up the functionality in such a way that you can have a conversation with, you know, the site manager of a site and say, you know, thinking back over the last few years, how many outages were there of less than a second? And how many outages were there of less than an hour? And how many outages were there of less than, you know, up to 4 hours? And you can have that conversation with them, you know, put the numbers of outages in there, and then we will stochastically, which is means to randomly generate those outages within our software, and then work out, well, how would have a battery been able to deal with those situations? And you can then use that to, you know, evaluate the total value of that of the battery being there and the kind of earnings that it would get from providing that backup, and then you know, put that straight into the into the returns of the battery.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, something we were talking about earlier, and I just want to sort of plug it in here, is the other new thing that you guys have done, where you can choose two different sort of life expectancies of a battery. You can use the warranted battery life expectancy, or you can adjust it to a more realistic.
Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty advanced functionality, so I don't expect everyone to be using this. But this is a pretty cool feature where up until this week, we're releasing this feature this week, you could only put in like a warranty sort of degradation. So you might have like a time-based degradation curve where every year it might degrade by 2% or something like that. Or you might have a degradation based on cycles. So, you know, you might have the battery has only got, you know, 4,000 cycles and then it's considered dead or out of warranty. And so you can like, you know, put in like a linear degradation based on that. And we were getting lots of feedback from our customers that like, look, that's great, but we want to be able to show an upside case to customers where the battery is probably not going to degrade at the warranty degradation. It's probably going to be much better than that. Mm-hmm. And we want to be able to show how, you know, what happens with the true degradation curve. And a true degradation curve is nonlinear. So it'll actually, a battery will degrade. And you'll notice this with your phone, right? The phone will slowly degrade and you'll slowly lose the charge of it. And then at some point, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years down the track, it just falls off a cliff, yeah. Right? And then you've gone from like having, you know, maybe 12 hours of charge, and then within like, you know, a few months, you're down to like 6 hours of charge and you're constantly plugging it in.
Yeah.
And batteries in the commercial space will kind of do something fairly similar. They are much better because the difference between a consumer battery and a commercial scale battery is typically in the cooling and being able to keep the cell temperature right down, so mm-hmm. it'll last a lot longer. But overall, that curve will still exist. It'll just be extended out for much longer.
Where are you getting this information from? Because if a manufacturer was to provide this, which I'd be highly doubtful that they would, but if they did, that would just be like basically their tests in a lab. Whereas I found, is it the Battery Testing Institute or facility in ACT that have a lot of the major brands on test, have many years of real world data, battery replacements. Have you reached out to them?
Oh, no. I mean, no? Personally not. I mean, the team may have. You will occasionally find this information in research papers. You'll find this information if some of the battery manufacturers will actually want to like promote this information and put it into the technical specifications. Like I would generally see this as a pretty advanced functionality that's probably left to someone that really understands how to read these technical specifications and like translate it into the software. We tried to do it in a way that's really easy to do, and it's not complicated to do, but it's not something that you need to do on your first pass. This might be the thing that you do on your seventh or eighth pass when you're trying to like, you know, you've kind of got this project basically to the end and you're just wanting to like go back to the customer and go, hey, we ran an extra model and we reckon you might be able to squeeze an extra percentage of IRR if you consider that above, yeah, there's another curve for this battery which is above the warranty, and that might be the thing that like gets the customer off the fence and makes the investment, right?
I think that's great, because if you look at battery warranty documents, it'll be, okay, we guarantee that there'll be 60% left at the 10-year mark or once this energy throughput's reached. If you review solar panel documentation, they'll actually say 2% in the first year, 0.2% annually after that. So yep. To actually have some data that you've researched to put against that is just going to make a far more accurate proposal and yep. maybe the difference between getting across the line.
So, exactly. I mean, yeah. back to like our core foundations, it's about fast, easy and accurate. And this is about accuracy. This is a feature that goes straight to the core of producing really accurate outcomes.
Excellent.
Talking about accuracy, why don't we go into the complex model or what, the advanced stack?
Yeah.
And, you know, let's not go down the rabbit hole too far. Let's just sort of stick our ass over the fence here. What does that one look like?
Yeah. So the advanced value stack is about taking the value stack that you get for any, you know, large utility scale battery and basically bringing that value behind the meter. And you need to do that by employing the services of an aggregator or building your own aggregator. And we've got some customers who are trying to take their solar business and turn them into aggregation businesses. ShineHub is a really good example of like one that's happened in the residential space. And when you do that, you'll be able to access a couple of different revenue streams that can really turbocharge the returns of a battery. The first and the easier one of the two is wholesale market arbitrage. So you can set up a battery on an on-market child meter, which is using some of the like the regulatory framework which exists within the embedded network frameworks. Mm-hmm. And you can give that battery access to the wholesale market whilst also getting network benefits for the gate of the site, right? So for the whole site, we'll get network benefits, and that battery will be able to trade in and out of the wholesale market without actually changing the network bill, without changing the retail bill. Of that whole site. And you don't need to change retailer in that situation, right? You don't have to go and take that whole site and put it, make it spot exposed to get that benefit. And that is like one of the, probably of the advanced value stack items, it's probably one of the easiest to set up and the quickest to get your benefits from. The sort of fundamentals of that is you're buying energy when it's cheap and you're selling energy when it's expensive.
Yep.
Right? So you'll buy energy probably in the middle of the day when there's negative prices caused by lots of excess solar in the market, and then you might be selling it in the evening when everyone's back at home and cooking their dinners, and the prices might jump from up to $300 a megawatt hour in those sort of short periods around 6 o'clock, and it's that difference. I remember at the very beginning I talked about how you want that 30 cents that translates to $300 a megawatt hour. And so it's that difference that you're trying to seek out with a battery and trying to basically take that that value and putting it against the upfront investment and getting that return. So that's like the first of the advanced ones, and it's probably the easiest one to set up. And there's lots of providers out there that can kind of support that setup. The more advanced one is contingency FCAS. So FCAS is frequency control ancillary service. Mm-hmm. And in our grid, we need to manage the frequency. Everyone would probably be familiar with this. They'd have inverters that have frequency management requirements mm-hmm. now under AS777. Well, there's a whole market that's dedicated towards managing frequency. Contingency FCAS is deals with events where you might have, Loyang Power Station trip off the grid, or Liddell, or you may have, the Queensland interconnector goes down, and then suddenly the grid has to respond pretty much instantly with more supply. And batteries are fantastic for doing this, right? They're like, you can deploy them, in milliseconds into the and be pushing energy in. And what within this by using this framework, you can kind of attribute value to the battery just for sitting there and being able to respond to these events.
Really?
So it's not even discharging energy in most cases, it's just making money until these events occur. So you need an aggregator. You need someone to be able to aggregate these assets together and be able to bid in those assets on your behalf. You need the functionality of the battery to be able to respond to when these frequency events occur. But if you have those two, then it's basically, money for nothing in many cases, where, you might have a battery which is participating in the contingency FCAS market, and it's only needing to inject an hour of energy over a whole quarter to actually participate in that market. Wow. But it's getting paid for every minute that it's in that market.
Far out.
Yeah. So it's a way of really turbocharging the benefits of it.
So do you see this as an added value in addition to, for example, Wade mentioned about peak reduction? So this is something...
Absolutely.
So if they were to put a proposal forward for peak reduction and then say, look, we may be able to provide you additional benefits, here's a simulation if we were to take advantage of the FCAS market, let's go and talk to an aggregator to see if we can work out some sort of arrangement.
Exactly. And this is like, and we talk about the value stack for batteries. It is literally a stack, right? So you've got at the bottom of the stack is demand charge reduction. In the advanced value stack, the next layer of that stack is wholesale market arbitrage. And then the final part of that stack is contingency FCAS. There's no reason why that battery needs to be doing all of those things on day one, right? So you may sell the battery simply on demand charge benefits, and it might be very marginal, but you basically say to the customer, look, this is marginal today, but we're working with these partners to unlock this battery, and in the future, it'll be this. And you can show them the pathway. You can go, here's case A, demand charge only. Here's case B, demand charge plus wholesale market arbitrage. Here's case C, demand charge plus wholesale market arbitrage plus FCAS. And you can show them, like, you, if you want to, like a management consultant like me, show them in a waterfall chart, or you can just show them, like, here's the three cases and this is how the value is going to build over time, so that you can kind of, like, get your foot in the door, get that battery deployed. Mm-hmm. What you also find is, and this is, like, a nice little benefit that people don't really think about, is that the more you build the value, the more revenue that you're bringing in, the larger the battery can get.
Yeah, right.
So you might start off where the battery kind of breaks even with a 50 kilowatt battery, let's say. And then you
add kilowatt hour?
Kilowatt. This is a good question, because in these advanced value stacks, what we're doing is we're talking about power functions, right? They're all trying to inject lots of energy very quickly to get value. So for demand, it's about that little peak that you're trying to slice off. For wholesale market arbitrage, it's about being able to push as much energy into those critical peak events when the energy market goes to $15,000 a megawatt hour.
Yep.
In contingency FCAS, it's about being able to push 10 minutes of energy really fast into the market. These are all power functions, meaning that don't put too much capacity in, guys. When you're looking at commercial batteries, one-hour batteries are actually really good. They're hard to find. Most people want to sell you two-hour batteries because they've come from a backup power background, and now they're taking these batteries that were good for backup power and they're trying to appoint them in power functions. But actually, it's the one-hour batteries, even if they're like a higher dollars per kilowatt hour cost, are likely to end up with a better return.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So,
good to know.
Yeah. But back to my point before is that if you have that, you know, 1 hour, 50 kilowatt battery that breaks even for demand charge reduction, when you add the wholesale market arbitrage, it may, you know, increase the battery size by 50%. And when you add the best battery size, right? So when we modeling battery curves, we model a range of different sizes. So we might model from, say, 25 kilowatts to 250 kilowatts in increments of 25 kilowatts, right? So we're modeling all of them. And when you model that range, you can get the like a net present value or an IRR, so the return for each one of those different batteries. When you add the value on top, what you see is that the maximum, the best battery from a financial perspective shifts up the size.
Yep.
So for demand charge only, it might be 50 kilowatts. The best net present value when you add the next one might be 100. The next one when you add contingency FCAS might be 200. Mm-hmm. And so you can start off by just get your foot in the door, put in the first battery, but have that eye to not only will you be able to improve the return for the customer by adding additional value, but you may actually be able to go and sell them more battery capacity when you go in there at that value as well. And so this is kind of like opening the door to massive potential for businesses that are like really thinking about this in an advanced way. You don't need to be doing advanced batteries on day one, right? So as a solar installer, don't look at this opportunity and go, oh my God, this is just for the really big guys like Shell Energy. No, it's not. This should be for everyone. We're trying to, part of us building the software was about trying to make it easy for people to get into this market and democratize the knowledge that's required to actually access this market. And you can go out there and go and find the simple battery value stacks. Go and find the ones that are demand charge reduction. Maybe you can move that customer from that large business tariff to a small business tariff. Maybe it's just a backup power scenario and you can get those batteries in. Go and learn by doing those projects. And as you kind of build your portfolio of batteries out there, the more batteries that you have in your portfolio, the more likely it is that you're going to be able to really effectively unlock those advanced value stacks, right? Yeah, right. So you can, once you get to a threshold of a megawatt, you might even be able to bid your own batteries into the contingency FCAS market as an aggregator, right? That's kind of like the, you know, perhaps the potential end game as a business. But it's like you don't need to be doing that on day one to make these batteries work.
I suppose the lowest hanging fruit for solar installers out there would be going back to existing customers, because that's the easiest people to sell to again. So if they're going out there to their existing customers, we're looking for someone that they've put PV on before. They're putting a shit ton into the grid or clipping because they're on an export limitation or something like that, and looking to add a few of those value stacks up by putting a battery in. And if you've done your job properly and you're still in touch with that person and maybe you're even monitoring that, you might even be able to do that, all that feasibility, without even calling them up to start.
Yeah.
The first call could be, hey, look at this.
Absolutely. I mean, you could go and hire an engineering grad on an internship for a week and sit them in front of orchestra and just go through all your old opportunities and identify the ones where it might not even be batteries, right? It might just be taking an old STC system that was sold with 30 kilowatts
yep.
and putting in 100 kilowatts or, you know, putting in 200 kilowatts or whatever it is. Like, you know, you can just focus on these low-hanging fruit. This software makes it so easy that you can basically do that work. Whereas previously, having to go through and, like, you know, punch in all the numbers and grind away in something mm-hmm. like Excel or Homer just created real artificial barriers to making that type of work happen. Whereas now with this, you can just have a temporary resource that you can train up briefly on how to do this kind of analysis, and they can be smashing out analysis to pre-qualify your next round of projects.
Yeah, right.
Two thoughts spring to my mind. A lot of the larger batteries that I'm quoting are because the end user has said, hey, I want a 200 kilowatt system, and can you quote on a battery as well? And then the company will get a price on a battery. They'll put it forward to the customer. The customer will just go, you know what, too expensive. I'll just go solar only. So straight away, here's an opportunity for Orchestra to actually provide a feasibility analysis behind that and hopefully get more sales across the line. Or another thought could be as well is even if the customer hasn't mentioned battery, if you're doing a proposal for them, it may only take 5 minutes to go, okay, here's a proposal with a battery added. I know you didn't say anything, but look at this. And then we should hopefully see more batteries going in, more revenue for the business.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, what we tried to do with Orchestra is make it really easy to model a range of different sizes. So rather than going in with a preconceived idea, okay, I'm putting 200 kilowatts of solar in, so I'm going to put in a 100 kilowatt hour battery, right? Mm. There's this kind of like some artificial rule of thumb,
yeah.
which frankly is crap, right? There is no rules of thumb about what is the best battery size to go with the solar size, because it doesn't relate anything to do with the solar, right?
Yeah.
Like it relates to the load profile and the tariff. And so with the software, you should be able to model a range of sizes. And then once you've modeled that range of sizes, you go, well, the best size to go with this particular site is not 200 kilowatts, it's 100 kilowatts.
Yeah.
And the return is this, not this thing, which is not going to break even. And so, yeah, you can take those projects that might not have worked where the customer said, oh, too much fixed cost, and you can bring them to a point where it's a lower spend with a higher return, and it's actually going to get along across the line. Or you can take those projects that you had no idea what the benefits are going to be, and now you can articulate those benefits to a customer.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we wrap up, because we've been babbling on for a bit here, there is a big thing that I wanted to talk about before we do, and that is probably one of the largest hurdles that that our customers out there face, and that is financing.
Mm.
So what has Orchestra done, and I already know the answer to this, what has Orchestra done to solve this problem?
Yeah, I mean, this is a work in progress for us, but we've released a couple of months ago a feature which we've called Business Model Builder. And Business Model Builder allows you to take the cash flow statement of a project, right? So the upfront investment and the ongoing benefits that you're going to go, regardless of, you know, the different value stack that you've got, and start to split up the value of that to the different parties that might be involved in a project. So a simple example is, say, a power purchase agreement, where you might have a three-party relationship. So you're going to have you as the installer, you're going to have a financier that's going to finance the system, and you're going to have an end customer. And you now need to look at what is the return for each of these different parties, and be able to articulate the return for those parties in a really easy to do way. And Business Model Builder allows you to literally within about 5 minutes design that business model and be able to visualize the different parties, and then be able to tune the returns for each of the parties to make sure that you're distributing enough value. This obviously has got all the PPA providers and financiers in the country extremely excited about what we're building, because now they can do this work that previously, which you would have done in Excel, which might have taken days of work in Excel, you can do in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of blowing the doors off of that particular opportunity. We're looking to take that to the next level and turn Orchestra into a bit of a financial marketplace where you can kind of add finance to a project. It's a work in progress for us, but it's a... we've already got some initial, engagements that are kind of locked in to make that happen, and so that's kind of the next phase for us. And this should really make it much, much easier to get through that process of articulating the benefits to a customer, and if a customer doesn't have the cash on hand, be able to direct them to an alternative route of financing the project that should unlock the project.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really interesting statistic that I heard from Smarties the other day, which is that a project is the chances of selling a project will move from, I think she said, 5% to 30% if you attach a financing option to a project. So, so if you think about what that means to the industry, every single proposal that goes out should have finance on it. It should not be something that is an option.
Yep.
It should always be on the proposal. And so as a business, we're trying to move towards making that easier and easier to do, and be able to very quickly add finance to a solution, and then be able to send what the financed option looks like to a customer.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so great. I love it. So what's next for Orchestra? I mean, you guys are always innovating and evolving. What are you working on now?
Yeah, I mean, for us, we've got a lot of stuff cooking, and we've got some product twos, which I'm very keen to talk about in a few months' time. We're still in stealth mode. But for us, it's really on the we're trying to improve the sort of analytical foundations of our tool. And one of the big, next cabs off the rank for us is probably going to be around EV chargers. So within the next sort of 4 to 6 months, we're going to have some really exciting EV charger features in the tool that will allow people to look at what happens when you install an EV charger and what's the sort of serviceability of that EV charger. So a common issue might be that you have a business that wants to install maybe 10 EV chargers, but there's a connection limit for that site. Right? Mm-hmm. They will have negotiated a connection limit, and you don't want to go over that, because if you do, you may enter into a world of pain as a business that's trying to install these. And there's ways that you can install these assets and still have them serviceable and not exceeding those limits.
Yep.
So there's no tools out there right now to do that, right? That's really done. That's in the world of Excel to do that kind of work. And so we're releasing features to be able to make that much easier, releasing other features to improve, how you deal with existing solar as an example that needs a bit of work within our tool. We're also wanting to, on the sort of sell front, make it so that it gets increasingly easy to kind of sell through the tool. So we're going to be releasing a feature that'll push out all the outputs of the tool in a consistent format, so you can link it in with existing proposal generation processes. So lots of solar companies will have some kind of combination of Excel plus PowerPoint or Excel plus Adobe InDesign. And we want to be able to knit our outputs into those proposals and make it really easy for customers to do that. We want to have a global defaults, so that as a business you can set certain defaults that you want and that all your parties within the business are using. We want to integrate in with different proposal generation tools out there. So there's some, you know, products like PandaDoc and Quilla that are really advanced, that can do full digital proposals, that it can have click to sign. That would be a game changer for many solar businesses, integrating directly into those software and allowing that to be done in a much more efficient way. And then obviously that financial marketplace that we talked about as well, where being able to have that integrated into the tool, and so that you can within the tool have, you know, your project, and then you might have three business model variants of that. So it might be the cash upfront purchase, it might be the PPA solution, and it might be the lease solution. Or you might have to show what's going to happen if you add a VPP to this to this solution, and be able to start sort of thinking about how you might distribute the different cash flows to the different parties that are involved in that sort of project.
So the only thing I can see kind of missing from the lineup at the moment is actually doing the designs, panel layouts. Is that something that's in your vision, or would you rather leave that to the companies already doing that?
Yeah, very much the latter. We don't want to build another version of Helioscope or PVSys. That is not what we want to do. We very clearly as a business decided that our job is in financial feasibility. There are lots of tools out there for doing panel placement, and that's just and they're really good at what they do, right? And so you know, we can take the standard CSV output that you would get out of PVSys or Helioscope, and you can directly load it up into the software. And at some point, I imagine we'll probably build API integrations into those software as well, because we don't want to be in that position where we're doing that type of work. We are working on some features that kind of will perhaps streamline that a little bit. So we want to be able to like identify what's the maximum roof area for a site, and therefore that might create an upper limit to the types of sizes that you can put on it. But we don't want to do that next step across into like SLDs and panel placement and other stuff that really is, it's the domain of like technical pieces of software. Our job is about financial feasibility and making that bit really done really, really well, and trying to make it done in so easily, back to our sort of the mantra of fast, easy and accurate, trying to bring forward that financial feasibility to as early in the sales cycle as you possibly can get it, right? So not just the qualification of projects, but the pre-qualification of projects, and being able to do that work with a customer, work out whether you've even got a project, work out if the customer's mucking you around or they're serious, and it's at that point that you can deploy your technical resources and go and do that work that's kind of takes a lot of time to do.
And I guess going back to a discussion we had earlier, the unemployment rate in Australia is extremely low. Businesses everywhere are struggling to get employees to fill roles, electricians, so upskill the workers that you already have.
Exactly. Give your workers superpowers. I mean, that's like, you know, one of the things that we as a business we think about is like, go and take the existing resources that you have and make them 2, 3, 4 times more productive. And it's that's the way that we're going to, you know, you're going to grow. I keep coming back to the statistic that for us as a planet to reach net zero, we have to decarbonize our entire electricity system. To do that and to get on track for net zero, we have to be deploying 5 times as much wind, 3 times as much solar, and 26 times as many batteries as we did in 2020 every single year to 2030. We are not going to get there through human resources, right? We simply cannot train enough people quick enough to be able to get there through that. So we have to do this through means of productivity, right? So sure, we might be able to double our resource base over that 10-year period, but we're going to have to really take to do a lot of the work in the short term. It's about making those resources that you have in your organization double or triple as efficient as they are today at their jobs, and doing that using software.
Year over year.
Year over year. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, James, this has been enlightening to say the least, and I really, really want to thank you again for coming here. That was awesome. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Wade. Thank you.
Thanks. Where can people find Orchestra?
You can hop on our website. So we're Orchestra with a K .energy. Sign up for a trial. There's a 3-week trial. You can hop on there. We have lots of support resources. When you get into the software, there's full onboarding checklists and little tips and tricks that are scattered throughout the software, making it really easy to kind of enter into the software. Lots of example projects in there. We have a full knowledge base so that you can, once you've signed up and you've got an account, you can hop into that knowledge base and you can kind of educate yourself how to use different parts of the software. We also have a really amazing customer success team, which is headed up by Georgina Hale. She's got 8 years of experience in retail before she came to us. So she knows everything there is to know about energy tariffs. And, you know, it's those resources can kind of help you get going and be really productive really quickly, because it's all about trying to, you know, this is a new piece of software. There is going to be a small learning curve. We've got that learning curve down to about an hour or an hour and a half. And if you invest a lot of, you know, invest that time, then you will get through that and then you'll be start to being productive.
Yeah, I can say Georgina helped me a lot in the modeling that I've done for some of our customers. It was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And she was great. And you know what? You guys don't use Loom. It was something else. It was so awesome. It was like these videos and instructions she sent me. I was like, this is the best. So yeah.
We have lots of resources that are on Vimeo and Scribe. That just makes it really easy to kind of enter in and get productive really quickly. We can, as part of the onboarding process, if you want us to do your first project for you, we can do that, right? Mm-hmm. You can have your projects that you've got coming up and you want to kind of model it within the software, you know, send us your load profile data and send us a bill, and we can like set up that project as your first, you know, one of your first projects, and that can form a template to other projects that you're going to do in the future. That's another point, which is that we've tried to make this software really scalable by using templates. So once you've set up the templates, you can just reapply those templates again and again and again, and you don't need to be starting from the ground up every single time. So you can, once, you know, as you kind of get more into the software and you get more information in there, the time of which you can model should go from being like an hour on the first project down to like 10 to 15 minutes within like, you know, 4 or 5 projects.
So talking about the load profiles that you've loaded into the system, because this is awesome. Gone are the days where you have to go and fit some manual data logging equipment, leave it there for a week, and then base your full design over a week's worth of data logging. You've loaded in a lot of different load profiles for different sorts of businesses.
Exactly. So, yeah, we've got sort of 100 different commercial load profiles which are in there, which will be completely anonymized. You can't work out who they are. They're just, you know, anonymous load profiles that can be rescaled, and you've got a whole year of data. So you can look at seasonal effects. You can look at, you know, effects over different weeks, or diurnal effects, effects within a day, and be able to, you know, rescale these and reuse these. So it really just reduces the barriers to be able to get in and start being really productive in the software. We don't want you to be like sitting there going, oh, I haven't got the load data, so I can't get going. We want you like to get in there, get productive, get the first results out, being able to share them digitally through the software. That's another thing, is you can theme the results and you can send those out to a customer, and you can have those, you can present this analysis as your own.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, again, that was Orchestra with a K, .energy. you could also get Andrew or myself at support@supplypartners.com.au. We can help you with maybe your first one as well. But thanks again, James, and thank you all for listening.
No worries. Thanks again. You.